The Typewriter Manifesto.
We assert our right to resist the paradigm, to rebel against the information regime, to escape the data stream. We strike a blow for self-reliance, privacy, and coherence against dependency, surveillance, and disintegration. We affirm the written word and written thought against multimedia, multitasking, and the meme. We choose the real over representation, the physical over the digital, the durable over the unsustainable, the self-sufficient over the efficient. The revolution will be typewritten.
If you were in Salem, Oregon last week, you could have attended the Salem Type-In. It's a celebration for typing enthusiasts. People get together to play with manual typewriters, to try typing speed tests, to trade vintage typewriters. The first one was held 5 years ago in Philadelphia, and today they're happening all over the world. Richard Pold calls this the typewriter revolution, a grassroots rebellion against the totalitarianism of the digital regime. It's driven by people who may like their MacBooks, but really love their Smith Coronas. Steve Paulson asked Pold to describe his own best typewriter.
You know, the best one I have actually found is one that I got just a few weeks ago. It's a 1938 Adler Standard. It's hard to put it into words, but it has a kind of snappy, springy feel. You feel like you're actually doing something. It's not like gliding over an iPad or something. It snaps, it reacts. Everything feels like it's just perfectly engineered.
But so it's the tactile experience of it is a lot of what turns you on.
Yeah, I love the feel of it, also the look of it. These things are beautiful. The sound of it, of course, and I have a little Groma Calibri in the studio. I can make a little tapping sound for you. Typewriter lovers love those sounds.
I do. You know, it's been so long since I've heard that you're moving that space bar down.
Yeah, they bring back a whole vanished world. There's even a smell of ink and oil that we love.
So this is a renaissance. I mean, that people are now rediscovering typewriters. In fact, some people who never used them in the first place, I mean, who grew up in the digital age.
That's right. So for them, it's not really a rediscovery, but simply a discovery. And the meaning of the typewriters isn't what it used to be either. So what I stress is that this isn't really a nostalgic movement, but it's exploratory. It's looking to the future. Because the typewriters are still essentially the same. You know, they were made to last. They still do what they did. But they're no longer a cutting edge. They're no longer an efficient tool. And that gives them a whole new meaning in our world.
What is that meaning if it's not just, I mean, because the irony, of course, is that typewriters at one point were the cutting edge of efficiency, but no longer.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they used to be a tool for standardization and speed. The motto of Remington Typewriter was, to save time is to lengthen life. So the great typewriter inventors would be just developing apps today or something. But today, I think they offer an alternative to the kind of cult of efficiency and speed. So now they mean something very different. They mean individuality and care and attention to craftsmanship and even something romantic. So a lot of people find a typewritten letter or poem to be very emotional and romantic, which is certainly not what it used to be.
And yet, it is so much easier to write on a computer, especially given the capacity to erase, to move things around. I mean, I remember when the Selectric first came on the scene and the magic of that correction key.
Right, especially if your goal is to produce a very neat, you know, formatted page of text that looks good. That's not what you use it for today. I like to use it for brainstorming, so getting out an initial idea, just seeing where it takes me. And you can get into a state of mind where the difficulty of changing what you just typed can be an advantage. So that can have two effects. One is you think more carefully before you start typing, right? You try to work out what you're going to say in your head. And that actually develops your powers of concentration, your ability to hold the thought in your mind. The other possible reaction, though, is you just plunge and you turn off your inner editor and you deal with what's on the paper. You can always change it later. You can always retype it, put it on the computer. But for the time being, you're setting aside that self-critical voice. And for me, one thing that's actually very hard to do on a computer is pay attention and stick to it when I'm trying to work on a difficult idea. So if I get stuck, it's always very tempting to, go on eBay and see what new typewriters are for sale, for right. instance.
Now, it sounds like there's kind of the creative dimension of using a typewriter. I don't know, it takes you into a different mental space. There's also kind of an element of, I guess, what I would call political and cultural rebellion. I mean, you're saying no to some degree to the digital age.
That's right. And that's what I tried to find in common among all the things people are doing with typewriters today. There are artists, there are musicians, there are teenagers. What do they all have in common, I asked myself. And I think there is a rebellion, whether it's by typewriting or using a fountain pen or riding a bike or whatever it is, to resist the over-digitization of our lives.
Well, then there's an element of self-reliance also with a typewriter. I mean, you don't have to be hooked up to anything electric. You can, take it off to your cabin and, be in the middle of nowhere and use the typewriter. No one, it's outside the surveillance system. No one can hack into your account and figure out what you wrote. I mean, there's something kind of liberating about it.
And there are so few things that are really private anymore. I mean, if you're having a conversation in the woods somewhere with someone, I guess that's private. But we all know that anything digital that you do is potentially hackable and is probably being analyzed by a government agency's computers right now. And even if you've done nothing wrong and the government does nothing to you, I think that creates a certain mentality where you're kind of looking over your shoulder. You're not really feeling free to say something. So anything that lets us just focus on what we're saying and the person we're communicating with, if anyone, is really valuable.
So one final question. How many typewriters do you own?
Delicate question. I think it's over 300. They're in my office at work. They're in my study at home. They're in the garage, the basement, the attic. And right now I do some community service doing typewriter repair. So I have other people's typewriters in my basement. I'm working on them, and I have parts machines to help me out. So it's proliferating, as my wife would be the first to tell you.
I have a similar problem with books, and I guess the blessing for me is books aren't as big as typewriters. So.
Yeah, and it's not like stamp collecting. It's a little awkward.
Yeah. Thank you. This has been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Richard Polt is a philosophy professor at Xavier University. He's the author of the blog and now the book called The Typewriter Revolution. And the cool thing about typewriters is that you can both write with them and you can also make music with them, evidently. This is the Boston Typewriter Orchestra.